So welcome to the Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. Today's show is going to reveal the techniques that Virginia is using with adult students that she tutors with literacy partners here in New York City. And this should be of interest to all parents because you can use these same techniques with your children. And for any of you adults who are doing some new job training or any learning activities, you can use the same procedures yourself. What we're going to be discussing is taken from our book, How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension. And you can read some of this material on our website, which is www.howtolearneasily.com. So, Virginia.
Yes.
You've got 8 students in your particular, do you call it a remedial education class, or is it just adult literacy?
Adult literacy.
And so these are folks who didn't make it in the conventional system, went out into life and living and as effectively illiterates, and then got the message that they really needed to become both numerate and literate. Is that the trick?
That is correct. They have, most of them have jobs, or they are going to school to learn a trade and have decided they've come to the conclusion that in order for them to do better at their job or to feel more fulfilled in life, or even some of them just want to help their kids and their grandkids with their schoolwork, they realize that they needed to learn it again. I needed to learn it, period, because they never learned it to begin with.
Yes, I remember meeting some of your students in their annual celebration of accomplishment, and it was really remarkable to watch these big, lovable characters so full of pride that they'd accomplished it, where before they were actually totally illiterate, and then they could read to an audience. And it was quite something to see.
Well, actually, I'd like to take that back a couple of steps and say that they actually had the consideration. I mean, before they came into the program, they actually had the consideration that they could not learn.
Yeah.
Some of them thought they couldn't learn. I can't get this. They felt they were stupid. There was something wrong with them.
Right.
And one more point. I'm sorry.
Mm.
I want to take it back one step and talk about it personally for me as well, in that when I was first introduced to these learning barriers several years ago, it just simply blew my mind. It blew my zorch when I was reading them, because for me personally, it also explained my own difficulties in school. Now, I am literate. I can read anything. I know how to use a dictionary. That's the one thing I know I can do, is words are not a problem for me.
You even managed our American university system and got through that in one piece.
Exactly, yes, that's true. But what my difficulty was math. And I had the consideration that I couldn't learn math. I was not good at math. I didn't know numbers. I wasn't good with numbers. And it was when I read these learning barriers that I realized, no, it's not me. It's the method through which I was taught.
Right.
Now, I can explain. Would you like me to elaborate further?
Please do. It's your show, my dear. By the way, listeners, I'd been working on this material for many moons. And I originally wrote these barriers to comprehension for use in corporate America, and that's how Virginia got wind of it. Over to you, V.
So, for me, math was always a difficulty, and when I read the part about gradient, I went, bong! That explains exactly why algebra was difficult for me. I stayed after class, and I had the teacher go through, or my tutor go through, every single step, piece by piece. In other words, do not skip any steps. Don't figure that I know how you get from A to B or B to C. I want to see every single step. During class, the teacher would skip steps and make the assumption that everybody got it. Everybody understood where he had derived this number from. Meanwhile, right. I'm out there saying, what? Where did this come from? I don't get it. So it wasn't me being stupid. It was the fact that it was an improper gradient for me. I needed to see every single step.
Well, all children need to get all of the sequential points of knowledge needed to make the next step.
Right.
And if you bypass or skip any of those items of knowledge, that's where they get hung up. And they don't know that they've missed it because it's missed. And the real problem is they start to have difficulty later on and think that they've got a problem with the thing that they appear to be having the difficulty with. And they've actually got to go back and get in what was missed.
Yep. Yes. So the other area or the other, one of the other barriers that grabbed my attention is the purpose barrier. And that applies for me to geometry and trigonometry. I looked at geometry and I said, why do I need to know how to calculate the circumference of a circle? Why do I care? Why do I need to know how to measure triangles or what's the use of a triangle and an angle? Why do I care? This was never explained to me, so I basically managed to get through it with a passing grade. But other than that, I never saw any purpose to learning it. What was the value to me? Whereas if the teacher had been able to explain, well, you use geometry in every day by doing this. Suppose you want to paint a wall. How much square footage do you need? Or if you want to put carpet down. Or if you want to measure distance. And to this day, I still don't know why I need to know how to measure angles and use triangles. That, I think, was probably more technical than I needed to know. But again, if somebody had explained to me the purpose, then I could have applied myself and made some sense out of it.
Right. You'd have actually paid attention.
Yes.
And they wonder why kids are bored and their attention's elsewhere. They're not paying attention.
Yes.
Nobody gave them any reason to pay attention. They see no value to it.
And one more barrier that wasn't so much what was inflicted on me as that when I read it, I realized that this was my learning style, or this is the way that I learned best, was the balance between practical knowledge and experience. In other words, I actually taught myself quite a few things by reading about it and then doing it. Reading
right.
about it and doing it. So I would get books at the library and read how do you do it, and then I would get all the materials that I needed, and I would actually do it. And I'll tell you, that is the best way to learn anything, is to read about it, then do it.
That's for some people.
Okay.
That's your style.
For me, that's my style.
That's correct. Exactly right. That's the balance between the theoretical side of things. Some kids will sit down happily and figure and be very theoretical about things and be able to memorize rote what is said to them and regurgitate it and get wonderful marks in examinations. And then if you ask them to apply it, they look at you quite blankly.
Exactly.
So there's several learning styles, and you're obviously one who needs to experientially do something to truly learn.
Absolutely.
Would you say that would be in the vein of the right brain learning, holographic learning type of scenario that we nowadays see a lot of?
I would say it probably treads in that area, I would say it probably is in that area. I would say it's not so completely over to that side
right.
where it's all pictures and that's the only way that person can learn. But having the physical objects and pictures and the experience to be able to absorb it is very much towards the right brain learner.
Yeah, Well, it's important for everybody to, in order for them to become accomplished, to be able to actually do the actions and deal with the mass physical objects that relate to what's being learned. In fact, you can become quite ill at ease and experience physiological upset if you have an imbalance between these two. But on the other side of the coin of the what we call three-dimensional learners or holographic learners, for our guests that haven't heard last week's program, we interviewed the 3dlearner.com, and they've made some phenomenal breakthroughs and in dealing with what normally are called dyslexic children and of course falsely labeled as learning disabled. And the lady involved, Mira Halpert, has developed the techniques to completely remedy this study situation and have these children really learning competently at the same level as others. So I advise anybody to go to that website. We also covered it in our book. We said that dyslexia is not truly understood, and it may well be the mark of a higher level of ability, because one of the things that you can observe with dyslexic folk is that they do use their minds in a different way than other folk. They actually are three-dimensional in their thinking. It's quite holographic and very vivid in Technicolor pictures. Many other folk simply have a flat screen in front of them, or they think in terms of words. That's not the case with holographic learners. So, Virginia, what have you seen in using these techniques with your adult students?
Okay, so with my adult students, knowing these techniques before I started doing the tutoring, which when we say adult students, we're talking about people who are anywhere from, let's say, their early 20s, maybe even just 20 years old, all the way up to people who are in their 60s. They are grandparents, and they're coming back because they want to get their GED.
Mm-hmm.
So the range of experience that these people have is very interesting. So what I do is, anytime I introduce something new, a new subject, I want to give them a purpose for it or a value for it. It's not just to learn so that you can pass and get your GED. I want to, or I should say, we explore together, because I am not, I keep telling them, this is one of the things I tell them and I, over and over again, I am not the font of all knowledge. I am here to facilitate you. We are having a discussion. I am not the be-all and end-all of knowledge. So what I do is we end up having a discussion about, well, how can this be used? We're now learning, let's say, multiplication. We're now learning decimals. We're now learning how to do fractions. So how do you think you could use this in your life? Where do you think you could use it? That's the first thing, is I want them to explore what is the purpose of it, what's the value of it in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing I do is I make sure that any new terms, any new words that are coming into this, as we, like we're doing fractions now, so we define what's a denominator, what's a numerator, any new words have to be defined. I'm sorry?
And what is a fraction? They need to know that. They
right,
need to
exactly.
know the definition of
that
a fraction.
Too. And actually what I did for that was I gave them a demonstration, a holographic 3D, this is a physical experience demonstration of what a fraction is. And I did that by taking an apple and cutting it in half, cutting mm-hmm. it in quarters, cutting it again, and each time was to, and then we would put it back together and say, okay, two halves make a whole, four quarters makes a whole, eight eighths makes a whole. So this way they were able to see a fraction is a piece of a whole. So it allowed them to have a three-dimensional understanding of what we're talking about, rather than just flat words or pictures on a page.
Right.
The next thing that I do is sometimes it can be difficult because I am dealing with 8 different people at the same time. So the gradient of learning can be faster for some and slower for others. So it's really trying to, in the beginning, what I would do is I will illustrate all of the problems that we go through, all the problems, to practice the skill of whatever it is, the skill is that we're doing. And I will go through it, and I will put right down every single step along the way. Long division, everything gets done, every single step along the way for the first few problems, so that everybody can follow along.
The sequence
and the
of
gradient,
actions, yeah.
Right, the sequence of actions, and the gradient is there. Then I will start shortening things up, because I know that those people who have gotten it quickly, they can start to get a little bored because they're seeing me write every single thing down. So I start to shorten it up and take leaps. While I'm doing that, I keep an eye on all the students, and I keep an eye on their faces, and I continuously check in and say, okay, everybody got that? Everybody understand where we, not me, but where we got that answer from? Everybody see it? And if somebody says no, then I say, okay, let's go back. And I then do the entire problem again with every single step mapped out again so they can see it.
Right.
And so that way I have a proper gradient, but also I'm keeping an eye on their face. I'm looking, because if I see any of those signs and symptoms of confusion or just completely I don't get it kind of looks, I will ask them, what part don't you get, or
where did you get left behind?
Right, where did you get left behind? What part don't you get? What part don't you understand? Let's go over it again. I never, ever make them wrong for not getting it.
Right.
Ever.
Now, if I remember rightly, as a result of the way in which you introduced particularly mathematics to these students, Literacy Partners actually asked you to create a course which is now called Applied Mathematics. Is that right?
That is correct. When I first started, I was doing multiplication, and I was doing, yes, I would say a multiplication and the, you might say the upper end of multiplication. In other words, the group that really, they weren't just starting out learning their multiplication tables. They had actually been able to learn their multiplication tables, and now they were looking to apply their multiplication skills. And so we would do a lot of word problems and different things, so the everyday kinds of problems where you would apply your mathematical or your multiplication skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for several years, and then I guess it was noticed that I worked at making the problems very practical. So in other words, it was going to the store, and you had to calculate what your grocery bill would be, calculating taxes, calculating a tip, anything that you would have to use in everyday life to where you would use multiplication in everyday life.
Mm.
And I guess it was noticed that I was doing this, and they said, you know what, we want you to start doing applied math.
Right, because these students, after they get their basics in with you and learn that, boy, mathematics is important stuff that I, you know, can use every day, when they moved on to higher classes after you, apparently it was noticed that they had a different sort of mindset and approach to the subject, which was a winning approach.
Yes, and also they actually enjoyed doing math.
Right.
It wasn't such a terrible hardship I had that they had to go through in order to be able to get their GED. Suddenly it was fun because they saw its use. They saw how they could use it every day.
Right. Did you have at any time to repair any students? Or when I say repair, I mean actually get them to overcome the unfortunate and incorrect thinking that that they were dull or poor students or couldn't learn. Did you repair any of that false thinking among any of your students?
Let me think. I can't think of anything directly that I did directly. I think it was just perhaps my belief in the fact that they could do this. There was never a doubt in my mind that they could not do it. That's the first thing. I always knew that they could do it.
Right.
And so I always approached it as, okay, we're going to get this done. We're going to do this. You're going to do this. You're going to learn it. We may have to go over it a few times, but you'll learn it, and I have no doubts about that.
Right. And once they see that they are learning, of course, the whole mindset changes, and they get very engaged in this winning proposition of learning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's good.
And actually, once some of the students are feeling very strong in doing their math, they would actually go and help some of the other students that weren't doing as well. So if I would allow everybody to work on their own, in other words, I would give everybody word problems or what have you to work on their own, I would find some students teaming up with each other to work together.
That's good. Yeah.
And I would actually give some students I don't want to say the authority role, but I would give them the lead role in that.
Yeah.
They could take charge and help other students along the way.
Right. Now, how did you go, or what successes did you have in dealing with the reading side of the show? Because we've spoken here about the mathematics side, which was a horror story for a lot of kids. But what's gone on the reading side?
The reading side, I do what's called fourth grade language, which means that they can read pretty well.
So they're not learning the alphabet at the stage when they come to you?
No, absolutely not. They have definitely, or should have, learned their alphabet at that point. They should know their phonics. They should know the sounds that letters make and be able to read these letters when they're formed into patterns called words.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to understand the concepts. Now, actually, the successes that I have had is that I will not, if somebody asks me, what does that mean, I will simply pull out a dictionary and say, let's look it up.
Right.
I will not give them a definition.
Yeah, don't make yourself the authority. Make the dictionary the authority.
Yes, but also I'm not so sure I'm going to give them the correct definition. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I pull out the dictionary, and I will always look up the word. So here I am modeling the behavior, and they see this, and you don't know how these students have turned around in that every time they ask me, what does this mean? I say, okay, let's pull out the dictionary. Now they've gotten to the point where they say, okay, this means, I need a dictionary. They don't even ask me what it means anymore. They pull out a dictionary and just start using it.
I think I heard the tale from one of your supervisors that they actually sought your advice about actually getting dictionaries for the classrooms.
Oh, yes, that's true.
That's a novel idea, having an appropriate level dictionaries, not monster, collegiate PhD class dictionaries, but for learners.
Yes,
Not quite down at baby childhood level, but certainly child's dictionaries, advanced child dictionaries. Yes. Well done at getting dictionaries into the classroom, at least.
Yes.
It's amazing the omissions that go on in learning establishments. So we're coming up close here. It's getting on for 25 minutes in this show, Virginia. What else would you like to tell our listeners that you've been up to and the successes you had at using the material that's in our book? And listeners, again, its website where you can get this information is howtolearneasily.com, and the book is How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the 7 Barriers to Comprehension. So, Virginia, what else you got for us?
Well, I would like to say that someday, unfortunately, because of the way the tutoring is set up I have between 8 and 10 students in my language class, and then between 8 and 10 students in my math class. And that can become unwieldy when you've got people of varying abilities.
Right.
You know, the range, the range can be as low as this and as high as that, and you're trying to walk a balance between the two so that you're not boring the crap out of the people who are really good, and you're not going so fast that you've got the people who are not so good cross-eyed and wondering where their head is spinning.
Right.
I really wish there was some way that I could break the group up and be able to work with those who aren't quite as fast. And I would love a chance to be able to use our rehabilitation of students process, because I think there are some students in there who really do need to have it run on them.
Yeah. Yes. That's right. We used it recently. I'm just trying to remember now. Okay. Well, thanks for that, Virginia. That's a nice wrap-up of how the material can be used with adults here. Of course, it works wonderfully with children.
And for yourself.
And for yourself, yes.
And for yourself.
Yeah. Because all of life's a learning curve, and the truth is you are as prosperous and as successful in life as you can learn easily. And for folk who have difficulty learning in any way, shape, or form, have difficulty in learning, actually have a tougher time in life. And if you don't believe that little proposition, just have a look at all of the learning you have to do when you're involved in relationships, how things change and what you've got to observe and come to comprehend and deal with. So learning is an ongoing daily thing in life. Okay, shall we say goodbye to our audience for today, Virginia?
Goodbye.
Goodbye. This has been Roger and Virginia with The Learning Curve. Bye-bye.